You're listening to Death of the Reader. Flex and Herds here with you for our second last show of the year. We are discussing the Honjin murder case by Seishi Yokomizo, chapters 8 to 13. And Herds.
Legs.
This is it. I mean, listen, I don't know if you've looked at the point score, Herds, but things are closer than they may appear.
I've had a glance. I've done a bit of an independent tally, you know, a peer review, as it were.
Just to make sure I wouldn't rob you at the end.
Well, I mean, I have to make sure that you're not, you know, fudging the numbers here and there. But I trust you. I trust you on the whole, you know? That's what we're here for. Mm-hmm. And I am very excited to see how you go with this one, because, as we know, 2 points on the line. One for solving the who, how, and the why to, you know, an acceptable standard. But double points on the how, because this is, as we covered last week, a murder with a locked room and apparently a Device X, the much blind, the Device X. You reckon last week there was poisons and dancing swords in the wind, which is, it sounds like madness to me, but who knows what could be in this little kettle of mystery that Seishi has cooked up for us.
So
delicious fish.
The thing with this stretch that I want to get into immediately.
Yeah.
Is, I mean, Kosuke Kindaichi.
I was going to say, the detective shows up.
He shows up in the opening chapter.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, I love him.
Yeah.
He's enthralling. He's hilarious. He has a stutter. And every time another character stutters, he points it out and says, I can't believe you're making fun of me.
Well, he gets to the point where he's had to correct multiple people. He's like, hey, stop making fun of me. He's like, everybody's making fun of me. Like, he's just indignant about it.
He's so in on the gag.
As we've said, like, this story is all about being hype, and he is the hype man of all hype men. Like, he is so excited. The second he discovers the murder mystery novels in the house, he's like, man, I could just sit here and read every single one of them. He's disappointed that he has to go and look at actual physical clues, but he just wants to read more murder mystery. It's great.
That said, I am once again disappointed by Seishi Yokomizo just giving up on giving descriptions and trusting that you have read other authors.
The introduction
for Kosuke says that he has a demeanor similar to Anthony Gillingham.
Mm-hmm.
Please, ladies and gentlemen, don't be confused by my sudden throwing out of a foreign sounding name.
I am confused.
This is the lead character in a different book. It's like, okay, cool. So what does that do for us?
Well, this is the thing, right? This is the kind of strange position this book, you know, sits in. I've been joking about it this whole time. There's just hype about murder mystery, but it sits in this weird position where I do think it's a solid story, you know, on its own, but it is blatantly encouraging you to go and read those other books, right? Like, that's what this guy is doing. He's writing this super hype time, the super, like, convoluted murder mystery, but constantly throwing out references and, you know, blatantly ripping off other stories in the hopes that you'll go off yourself and go read them to, like, share in this excitement that Yokomizo clearly has for the genre, right?
Yeah, I mean, the enthusiasm is extremely tangible, and I also love just how directly ripped his description of Kosuke's drug habit is.
Yes.
It's beautiful. Yes. He's just like, unsuspectingly, this drug-addled idiot became a national hero overnight.
Crazy how that happened.
And he's so in on the gag about it, and I absolutely love it. Although, that said, I do not understand how, through this entire novel, Kosuke Kindaichi has exactly one pose, and that is adjusting his hair.
That's his quirk. That's what he does. Well, this ties in less with the foreign, you know, the Western influence, and more with the, like, other, like, Japanese, like, weird detective characters, like Keiji Kogoro and such, like, All these, like, detective characters tend to be eccentric and, like, stand on chairs and eat ice cream and ruffle their hair a lot, because that's just what they do. They have to be physical, which I love. I love that that's just the thing that Japanese detectives do.
I mean, to be clear, I do love the characterization of him in terms of how enthusiastic and just...
He's just a nerd.
Yeah.
He's a giant nerd.
That said, though, it makes him feel incredibly two-dimensional as a character. Like, he is a facsimile of a character.
Yes.
He's an embodiment of enthusiasm without the third dimension.
Yes. I mean, we'll get more into this, I think, in the third part of this story next time we chat. But there are some scenes which he's just, you know, telling us, you know, facts and logic. And it's like, okay, I understand that this is the author, like, telling us what's going on in the story. But, like, what does Kosuke feel other than excitement for what the author has told him to be excited about, right?
Yeah, the other interesting thing is that the kind of narratorial voice that we've been having so far in the story disappears and is more or less replaced by Kindaichi,
yep.
which I think is actually a good choice, because otherwise it'd be really hitting you over the head with the enthusiasm for other murder mysteries.
Yeah.
But it was a very noticeable change. It wasn't, yep. I don't think it was delivered in such a way that it was well integrated. But at the same time, as I keep saying, it is very in on the gag. Yeah, it's not like the story doesn't know what it's doing.
I would say jarring is an appropriate term. Yeah. I don't think it's bad, but it is definitely like we dropped the poetry, right? Like, as I said, all the clues and all the bits and pieces that we've been learning up until this point, like every chapter end put a smile on my face as we move from clue to clue. We bounce from person to person, scene to scene. But then once our detective shows up, we pretty much just follow him as he like finds everything you missed or could have inferred from the previous chapters, and we drop the poetry and instead we're kind of following his train of thought. And I use the term train deliberately here. It is a railroad moving from place to place, and that's fine. Like, it's the second act of the story. This novel is structured very, very deliberately, which lets itself out of the show, mind you.
Yeah. I think that the way that this is written out is thoroughly enjoyable, but it's the kind of murder mystery that gives genre fiction its reputation for being incompatible with literary fiction.
Sure.
Right? It's very difficult to explore the human condition when we're just basically, you know, writing an advertising tabloid for other murder mysteries in the form of a narrative.
Yeah, I will say that I do enjoy some of these set pieces in this story, just to jump on that for a second. The character of Suzuko I find to be especially interesting because she is, as Ginzo says, she's brain addled. She's a young girl. So, you know, how reliable is her testimony anyway? But he blatantly says, like, I would trust her not to tell a deliberate lie. So, like, we know, you know, going into this story and assessing the evidence from our point of view, we can trust her, even though she's an excellent piece in that she's not reliable in the sense that she's not going to pick up on all the details. She's not going to understand the implications of what she's saying, but we can trust what she says to, at face value, be accurate to how she perceives the world and how she perceives the case. I actually really like her as a piece in the story, right?
I think the difficulty that I have with Suzuko and Ginzo is that as the story progresses, they start to become like the only characters.
Yes.
Everyone else kind of regresses into the background. Mm-hmm. And truth be told, that is a pretty standard play in a murder mystery novel because you start to focus on the things that matter as you progress on. But the interesting thing to me about Ginzo and Suzuko as we've been going is that it's kind of just they're the only characters with any depth rather than that we are actually explicitly exploring them as a vessel for the mystery. The reason we keep seeming to visit Ginzo's head is because he has a good eye for who's telling the truth.
Yes.
And that's his purpose.
Yep.
And Suzuko has a good eye for what's going on, but can't quite explain it.
Mm-hmm.
And from a mystery standpoint, I think it lends itself very well to how the mystery has been built here.
Mm.
But as enjoyable as this is, it just keeps feeling hollower as it goes on.
Yeah.
Like we have the decorative framing of a murder mystery and kind of nothing on the inside. And that's not really an indictment of the book because it's still a great read, but it's just very different to what I normally, it's very different to what I would normally recommend on this show.
Yeah. I mean, we have a lot more time spent on the heroes of the story and like explicit, like good guys, to the point that the characters, as we say, the characters that we spend the most time with, it's pretty much outright said that we can trust them, that they're not going to try and, you know, blindside the detective or us and say, ha ha ha, I was the villain the entire time. Like, I hired you to solve this murder, but it was actually me the whole time. Like, we've covered books like that on the show before, but we don't really get the sense that that's what's happening here. And the characters that could blindside us, like the guy Ryosuke or whatever it was who opened up the locked room in the first place, and like Subaru, who's like the murder mystery guy, like all these characters that are depicted as being of questionable moral character or maybe, you know, could have been involved in the murder, we don't really get to see in any depth, at least not in the middle part of the story.
Yeah.
We see more of them in the first and obviously the third parts as we like, you know, get to the character lineup, but, you know, we're not there yet.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously so far, it sounds like we're railing a lot of criticism in this book, and we are, but I don't think it detracts from the joy of reading it.
For sure.
It has been a fantastic experience. However, now it's time to criticize it for things I genuinely dislike.
Uh-oh, I'm scared.
And that is when Katsuko's university friend shows up after getting injured in a bus crash.
Yes. And this is a weird one.
She calls Kosuke Kindaichi to the hospital to show him two letters that Katsuko had given to her. And that's basically our entire character motivation.
Yes.
It's terrible.
It's like, very strange.
The thing is, as we've said at many points on this show, a lot of murder mystery authors are very aware of social issues and integrate them well into their books. And the issue that these letters bring up is how important a woman's virginity is to marriage, which is to say, from our perspective, not at all. But the kind of annoying thing is that even though Seishi Yokomizo clearly agrees with that because he's made it his villain's motive, as far as I'm concerned.
What? That's crazy.
It's just kind of exhausting. Like, I felt deflated reading that was in those letters. I was just like, we've not reinforced any of the themes that we've introduced earlier in the story, except for the fact that they care about lineage.
Yeah.
Just honestly, it's a shame that a novel that has had so much energy as this and so much enthusiasm falls so flat on its motive by, first of all, putting it in just a letter that shows up 2/3 of the way through the story, but second of all, doesn't actually make the motive engaging enough to warrant its surprise arrival. Maybe this was an engaging motive when it first showed up, admittedly, assuming I'm correct, but I think that the tone of the book has very much established case.
We know, I'm not going to confirm or deny any, like, you know, correct motivation guesses, but in the novel, when the letters show up, there is a little aside that says, when you get to the end of this story, you'll understand the significance of these letters. So clearly they're important. On my side of the table, I'm also going to say, like, why did they have to be brought by this university student? Like, we are told, well, actually, we're not just told, we witness the bus crash.
Yes.
Kosuke passes by the bus crash on the way there and he says, you know, thank goodness I decided to walk instead of catching that bus. And this doesn't really have anything to do with the broader plots. I was thinking when I first read it that maybe somebody had tried to crash the bus on purpose so that this girl couldn't get to a destination, but that's not really, it's not really something that's brought up or even questioned.
It's kind of purely the dramatic irony of, oh, look, the linchpin had to arrive late because of a bus crash.
Yeah, it's a very strange plot point. Obviously I'm not going to confirm or deny anything, but letters.
There's not much room to maneuver, honest.
I'm not going to try and maneuver. That's my plan right now.
Going back to what we were saying about the characters getting very two-dimensional, the other frustrating thing about this is that basically once Ryuji fronts up to Ginzo and Kosuke and says, yes, I was in town, but it was because I just didn't want to interrupt the wedding.
Yeah.
Right? Then we never suspect him again. There isn't a narratorial thought about him being suspicious for the rest of the book. That line is just dropped and it's so tangible. Like,
there's room for drama, right? Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
That is the biggest stumbling point, I think, of this novel, that we have all of the pieces in the mystery. The mystery itself, I think, is quite well concocted. But what this novel really lacks is a proper dive into the character drama that exists in the family. And again, we're still in part two, but this is a problem that we're already starting to experience.
Yeah.
Kosuke doesn't interrogate the family members properly. He speaks with Suzuko like once, and then he goes off and has a chat with a guy at his charcoal kiln.
Right. If we compare this to The Three Taps, the first book we covered on the show, I think that in construction, they're very similar. They portray a very different style of enthusiasm, but I think they both carry a lot of enthusiasm for the genre. Just classic Golden Age, right? It couldn't be more Golden Age if it tried. But I think that Knox addresses the faults in this book in The Three Taps very well. And, you know, not to say that one particularly inspired the other.
No, if anything,
it was the other way around. But I think that just as far as Golden Age novels go, this is as Golden Age as it gets. And we'll see how we go for the next week. But, you know, that is going to be a big asterisk on the recommendation rankings for review season at the end of the year here.
I do want to say, just because you brought up The Three Taps, I thoroughly enjoyed all of the characters in that novel. And I think that if we were to, you know, order the two, I think that just having that quirky fisherman man who I love and that like crazy car mechanic guy, like those are the characters that I remember.
Exactly.
That's what made me love that book, even though it's like not my favorite.
Yeah.
But I remember all the characters in that novel. It's great.
Exactly. Whereas this book, it's going to be Kosuke and no one else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyhow, you are listening to Death of Alreda. We are Flex and Herds discussing chapters 8 to 13 of the Honjin murder case by Seishi Yokomizo. And we'll be back with more of that in just a second. You're listening to Death of the Reader. Flex and Herds here with you. We are discussing the Honjin murder case by Seishi Yokomizo, chapters 8 to 13. And Herds.
Is he Flex?
It's time to delve into Device X.
It's time to maneuver, as they say.
I'd like to take some credit for predicting that the hand was going to be in the proverbial cat box.
Yeah, it was good. It was well played. Well,
sorry, the literal cat box is
I was
going to
say, it was really both. Because he picked the hand out of the cat box, but then held it in a handkerchief so that nobody could see what it was until we uncovered the corpse of the three-fingered man.
I have to admire the dramatic flair of Kosuke Kenaichi to carry the hand around with him until it served the plot to unveil it.
Yes, he was like, what would have happened if they hadn't found the corpse there? Would he just have kept holding the hand like, I guess I better take it to bed with me and
just imagine the police had like grabbed him and you know? Be like, why do you have this hand?
Yeah, that's how you get sent to prison. Yeah, I will say actually, yeah, I mean, we got to talk about the mystery itself and how the heck you're going to solve it. But I will say it's nice having a detective who commands some authority and can actually get us to the places we need. Like, we get this whole passage about how every time Kosuke, like, walks up to, you know, one of the other the policemen, he's like, hi, I'm Kosuke, and I have these papers. And like, sure thing, sir, whatever you need, sir. So, Flex, you are in the perfect position to have all the information you could ever need, arguably too much,
definitely,
to solve this thing. What are your thoughts?
Now, I will say, despite your statement just then, nothing about Kosuke Kendaichi sells me quite on his authority, quite like Yukawa from The Devotion of Suspect X or Detective Galileo.
Sure.
However, I do think one of the excellent things here is, going back to that dramatic flair, how Kosuke has pointed out all of the clues to us but told us nothing about it. In terms of creating a Golden Age puzzle for Device X, I think that Seishi Yokomizo has so far done a very good job because I think we have been appropriately given a bunch of things that can only be tethered together, pause for effect, in one particular way. The piece that I was missing last week when I described this device was some way to get the rope or the string over the hill that was described to us at the beginning of the novel.
Okay.
And we very explicitly go out and we find a bunch of bamboo that has been hollowed out pointing in the direction of that water wheel.
There you are.
What tripped me up, though, and the thing I want to talk about before we get into the rest of Device X, though, Herds, is Saburo.
What about Saburo? He's just an innocent, suspicious-looking boy. What are you talking
about? Saburo, we find at the beginning of this stretch of chapters, with a large katana gash over his rear shoulder.
Oh my goodness, yes. He's been murdered!
He's been put into the locked room in the same way that his brother and new wife were. And I don't understand what's happened.
Yeah?
Because clearly what that establishes to me is either that he is trying to cover for himself by, you know, I've been injured by the mysterious culprit too.
The three-fingered man.
How could this possibly happen?
I'm not the three-fingered man. It is somebody else. That's how I've been injured.
Either that, or when they were discussing murder mystery and he kept bringing up mechanical puzzles and how he wasn't particularly good at them. And Kosuke basically said, oh, well, you know, maybe you could figure this one out. He's gone to try and prove Kosuke right and be like, I can solve this.
I can do it using the Device X.
Here's the thing I don't understand, though.
What don't you understand?
How he got injured if that was what he was trying to do.
I don't know.
Because surely if he was just trying to recreate the device, it would have been incredibly easy to set up the katana on a string that then gets pulled out of the window by a water wheel. Because that's clearly what I think is going on.
Well, you think he could have just stood five steps to the left and it would have been
fine? I think he could have just stood aside when everyone hears the string popping and snapping, the like pinging noise that we keep hearing. He opens the doors to the annex house and says, I've figured it out. I've solved my brother's murder. I just, like, I don't understand why he either allowed himself or managed to get himself injured in this moment. It makes no sense.
It
None.
Would- I mean, it would seem that he's just an idiot. That's the solution I would put forward.
Like, my initial expectation when I was reading through the first go was that it was actually that Ryuji had come in and reset up the device with him and then stabbed him and wandered away. But Saburo is still alive and doesn't say anything about it.
Well, that's the curious thing is that Saburo has been, like, attacked by the three-fingered man who we have the corpse of that has been burnt for some time at the end of this stretch of chapters, mm-hmm. which means that you have this paradox, right? And this is why it's a good murder mystery, because it has these paradoxes that we have to solve. If Saburo has been stabbed by the three-fingered man and he knows, like, if he's in on the crime, he knows that the three-fingered man isn't real, which I think is something that we can pretty comfortably say at this point. Well, not that he's not real, but that, like,
he wasn't involved.
Yes,
he was dead before
that. He's a red herring. Mm-hmm. Then, like, why would Saburo not use this as an opportunity to try and clear himself, being like, yes, I've found the three-fingered man. I saw him.
The same way that I was saying that Ryuji just disappears off the suspicion list once he, you know, mentions an alibi for himself, Saburo just kind of doesn't do anything to warrant more or less suspicion on it.
Yes, because the first impression that I had when I was reading this for the first time was that the obvious reason why you would say the three-fingered man has stabbed me is so that you can say the three-fingered man is a real person. And, you know, I am not them, but he's also just suffered really grievous harm and he's just a kid. Like, I mean, it's very strange. It's very strange, Flex. Yep. I don't know that you have an explanation for this.
Here's what I think. What I think is that when they wake up and they hear the mechanism running, they hear the string pinging, Kosuke says to Ginzo, "What's the time?" And Ginzo says, 4:30 a.m., exactly the same as last time.
Mm.
So I think the most likely explanation is that Saburo had set back up the mechanism but couldn't figure out how it had started.
Okay.
And then whatever started it is automated to happen at 4:30 in the morning, and he got injured not realizing that the device had begun to move.
It's possible. I like this explanation. So I guess we've talked a lot about the how. Mm-hmm. I think you've demonstrated your theory to some extent anyway.
Have I said who I think actually killed Kenzo?
That's what I was going to get to. Do you want to get to the who and the why next?
It's a murder-suicide.
It's a murder-suicide.
Because virginity, everyone.
Virginity!
We did it.
That seems important. You sound really sad and disappointed in our author for today. Do you want to walk us through a little bit of your reasoning here? Who is the murderer here?
Kenzo set up a mechanism to make it look like he was killed.
Okay.
Because he didn't want the shame of having talked his family into this marriage, only to discover that, shock horror, his wife wasn't a virgin.
Okay. That's definitely a theory. Controversial one, might say. I don't think you'd write that in a modern novel. I feel like that could be somewhat sexist in some ways, and, you know, a little bit backwards.
I don't mean to sit here and complain about the
old time politics,
the proclivities of people's marriages in the 1930s.
Yeah,
whatever. The 1930s happened. I just dislike is nothing else happening. There isn't anything other than the family are all slightly insane. Also, his wife wasn't a virgin. Like, that's the entire motivation.
Okay.
As far as I see it, Herds. If there is more, I am begging you, tell me I'm wrong next week.
Well, that's what we're going to find out. Oh, we got points on the line. This is, second last, last book for the year, at least.
Yeah.
There's a lot on the line for this. You sure you want to look in a murder-suicide? Do you think there'd really be a murder-suicide in this lovely old school golden age detective mystery?
I was really hoping it was going to be some conspiracy between Ryuji and Saburo, and we were going to find out some big twist that would explain why they were so obvious at the end.
Okay.
But I don't think we're going to get it. Okay. Alrighty. But let's do the terrible thing and let's try solve for device X.
Yes, let's go.
So we have a katana.
Yep.
A bloody rag.
Mm-hmm.
We have a length of koto string.
Yep.
We have a koto bridge.
Mm-hmm.
We have a sickle and then, like, a hatchet jammed into the tree on one night after the other.
Mm-hmm.
We have a stone lantern with the katana in front of it.
Yep.
And we have a hollow stretch of bamboo.
Yep.
And we have a water wheel.
A giant water wheel that is broken down by the time we get to it in the future.
So All I can say, because if you geometrically line it up, you can draw like a triangle basically around the stone lantern, the annex house, and the tree, the camphor tree that the sickle is stuck in.
Okay.
So basically you could run like a thread between the three of them that would then create some tension when the water wheel started spinning. The sickle would at some point, presumably once the wire has like risen up enough and got tense enough, cut the wire, which is why it's stuck into the tree in the first place. And then the wire is spooled by the water wheel out of the way of the crime.
Awesome.
The thing I don't understand, the thing that confuses me, is how there is no stretch of wire left at all. You could explain that with any kind of like, you know, slip release knot. So I don't think it's significant, but it is weird that in the course of the crime, we haven't found even like a fragment of string.
Just like a big line of string, like stretched around the entire ground. It's like, why is that a trail of string?
Yeah.
I mean, it could be like, you know, when you got a vacuum cleaner and you like, you pull the power out and you hit the little button and it like zoop, sucks inside. Maybe there's just a big piece of string wrapped around the water wheel.
My assumption is that it is a length of rope that is wrapped around the water wheel.
Okay.
Because that wouldn't be as suspicious. And then it's a koto string to actually have the tensile strength to deal with the katana and then cut against the sickle.
I like it.
But, you know, we're dealing with Device X. There's not really much more I can say than that. Whether Kenzo stabbed himself and then let the katana be pulled away, whether the katana was left dancing around the room, as I jokingly suggested last week, whether it was like mounted in the wall on the far side and then was then pulled off the wall and flung across the room and sliced them both in one swift maneuver, who knows? Well, that's beyond solvable Device X territory.
Sure.
But I think the fact that we can draw a line between the blade that cut the rope and the three pivot points that it would have maneuvered around. I still don't actually know what the Koto Bridge is for. That still doesn't make sense to me at all.
I want to poke at something else because, you know, whether or not your Device X, you know, description is accurate enough or not, you know, whatever. My question is just, when they get to the crime scene, there's like blood on the walls and three-fingered fingerprints everywhere and like all sorts of garbage. In the timeline of events, Katsuko and Kenzo, they get married and they go to the bedroom and then there's two people screaming. Like, how does there then get all this blood on the walls? If it's a murder-suicide, like, I don't feel like there'd be enough time to like put blood on the walls and like throw everything around. I don't know. It seems a bit weird. And like
the walls, Ben.
There's all this like madly plucking on the koto strings. Like what's going on there?
Well,
thoughts and feelings.
Presumably what's happened there is that there was actually time because we spend so much time dealing with, oh, they had to get through the gate and then they had to get through the door.
Interesting.
Like it took a while for people to gather. And you know, the wildly plucking on the koto strings, I don't know whether that's the mechanism going off or whether Kenzo just decided for a bit of dramatic flair he was going to strum on the koto to set the scene.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's so explicitly said to us at the start of the murder mystery that the pillars are, like, painted red and that they fade to brown, somewhat like blood. So if that was planted ahead of time, that would make sense, although I can't lean on any particular example there. And as for the rest of it, I mean, listen, if you're going to stage your own murder-suicide, why not do a bit of set dressing once you've killed your wife?
Well, like, that's fair enough.
If we have an entire chapter purely describing Device X, it has failed Sir Father Knox. And this book will lose the title of Fair Play Locked Room Murder Mystery.
Look, I will tell you, I won't confirm or deny that, but I am looking forward to Kosuke's monologuing in the third part of this story.
I will contact the publishers and I will tell them to remove that from the opening chapter of this book. It will be gone from future editions if I have my way, Herds.
I'm in for it. I'll sign up on that letter. Let's post it. Oh my goodness.
You're listening to Death of the Reader. We are discussing the Honjin murder case by Seishi Yokomizu. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll be discussing chapters 14 to the end for our final main episode of the year next week. But of course, stick around because we do have review season to discuss.
Oh boy.
And we'll be doing that over the summer break.
I have to order my children. Which murder mystery books do I love the most? I have to decide. I hate this.
I reckon it'll be pretty easy this year up until maybe the top four.
Oh, no.
Anyhow, this has been Death of the Reader. We will see you then. You're listening to 2SER.